I am a postdoctoral fellow at the Center for the Study of Black Youth in Context at the University of Michigan. And I want to thank you all for coming out pretty early in the morning on the last day of what's been a pretty long conference. So as you can see, I'm going to be presenting a little bit today about some research that I did with some of my colleagues focusing on pathways from neighborhood characteristics to African-American adolescents' mental health outcomes. And this is a multi-level mediation path analysis, which I'll talk a little bit more about later in my presentation. I do not have any disclosures. So the general research questions that I will be attempting to address in this presentation include whether or not neighborhood characteristics may influence African-American adolescent social support, and whether or not there may be neighborhood effects on adolescent psychological health that might be mediated by adolescents' experiences with and perceptions of social support. So similar to Dr. Cannon-Smith, the study is informed by Bronfenbrenner's ecological model. So mostly I just want to acknowledge here that adolescents' experiences with social support are not occurring within a vacuum. There's these larger kind of environmental factors that can influence the readiness and kind of availability of social support for African-American youth. I'm also drawing on social disorganization theory and other scholarly work that posits an association between neighborhood economic disadvantage and breakdowns in social cohesion. So for example, Massey and Denton have talked about the ways in which in more economically disadvantaged communities, neighbors may be less likely to trust each other, may stay indoors more and limit their contact with each other, may see their friends and family less frequently. Yet at the same time, I also want to think about neighborhood factors that may promote social cohesion. So researchers have found that, for example, residents who are less mobile may be more invested in their communities, so they may be more likely to form relationships across generations and even within their generation if they're more stably located in their neighborhood. In addition, I also wanted to look at neighborhood racial composition, specifically the percentage of African-American residents, and how that may also promote social cohesion. So we know that African-American communities are typically considered to be more communalist or to have higher levels of communalism. We also know that in these communities we may see higher prevalence of intergenerational ties. So I wanted to look at, again, a multitude of aspects at the neighborhood level, how these might relate to African-American adolescent psychological health, and how these may be mediated by adolescents' cumulative experiences of social support, as well as their perceptions of their neighborhoods as a supportive and cohesive place. So you'll see here that I'm looking both directly at associations. Can you hear me okay if I'm not so close to that? So like I'm bending over the phone. Okay. So I'm just going to talk from here. And if you can't hear me, just like raise your hand, okay? So I'm looking directly to see associations between these different neighborhood characteristics and adolescents' mental health, but also indirectly between their experiences and perceptions of social support. This study included 571 African-American adolescents. About half of the sample was female, and the mean age of the adolescents was 17.8, about 18 years old. I operationalized neighborhoods as block groups, so using census data, the block group is the smallest and most concise unit of analysis available. The residents, the adolescents in this study resided in 118 different block groups with about 5 participants per block group. So to go a little bit in more depth about the neighborhood variables that I used, I included poverty rate, which was the percentage of residents in the block group that were living below the poverty line. The unemployment rate, which was the percentage of residents over the age of 16 who were interested in finding employment but were currently unemployed. Residential stability was the percentage of householders who had lived in their same household for more than 5 years. And then the percentage of African-American residents in the block group. And at the individual level, I looked at a composite measure of social support. So this included support that adolescents reported receiving from parents and peers, but also from a natural mentor. So this would have been a non-parental adult could have been like an aunt, an uncle, someone in their community who they could go to for support and guidance. This was not, however, a formal mentor. This wasn't like a big brother, big sister. This was an adult that they had formed a relationship with, like naturally or kind of a more organic relationship. I also asked participants to indicate the extent to which they agreed with a number of items reflecting how supportive or cohesive they perceived their neighborhood to be. So these included things such as, I can go to adults in my neighborhood if I need advice or support around different issues. If there was an emergency, I could trust someone in my neighborhood to help me. And then I assessed symptoms of depression and anxiety using the brief symptom inventory. And I controlled for a number of individual and family level factors that might have been kind of proxies for neighborhood effects. So I was just trying to isolate what was happening at the neighborhood level, make sure that it wasn't just looking at the neighborhood level as a proxy for some individual or family factors such as family structure or family socioeconomic status. I also controlled for adolescents' prior symptoms of depression and anxiety. And then I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the analytic approach, but I really just want to acknowledge that I used an approach that allowed me to kind of disentangle the between group from the within group effect. So I was trying to understand how things were affecting adolescents at the neighborhood level, which is a between group. I told you there were about 5 participants per block group. And I wanted to understand how these neighborhood effects were relating. So the neighborhood effects would be like a level 2 variable or something at the between group level. I was trying to understand how those might relate to individual outcomes. So that would be kind of a within group factor. And this multi-level mediation model allowed me to disentangle that between group from within group to estimate what was going on in terms of indirect effects from a between group factor to a within group factor. So it's just important to note that as I move forward and kind of talking about the findings, that the indirect effects and the things that I'll be reporting are specific to the between group level. So these are really trying to get what's going on at a neighborhood level and separating that out from just within group variation. As I mentioned before in my previous slide, I was looking at both direct and indirect pathways. It's just important to note that because in the next slide, I'm going to show you only the significant findings. And I did not find any direct effects. So you may notice in the next slide that I'm going to be following just the indirect effects because those were what was significant. The direct effects were not. And also wanted to just mention that I did find correlations between the 4 neighborhood variables that I talked about before. So even though there were some moderate correlations, they were not very high correlations. When you have very high correlations, that can present issues of multicollinearity. I just want to acknowledge that those were not, in fact, issues in this analytic approach. However, there were correlations between these variables. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the discussion. So I'm just going to slowly kind of build up the findings that I had here, kind of one variable at a time. So you'll see here that I found that the unemployment rate, again, this is at the neighborhood level, that a greater unemployment rate at the neighborhood level was associated with more symptoms of depression and anxiety among youth via their perceptions of their neighborhood as a supportive and cohesive place. So kind of some support for this breakdown in terms of greater unemployment, that being a risk for youth's psychological well-being via their perceptions of their neighborhood as a supportive and cohesive place. I also found, in terms of the poverty rate at the neighborhood level, an indirect association with depressive symptoms, such that a greater poverty rate at the block group level was associated with more symptoms of depression among youth via reduced experiences of cumulative social support for these youth. But in contrast, for residential stability, I actually found that residential stability promoted both greater levels of cumulative social support and youth perceiving their neighborhood as more supportive and cohesive. And you can see that these ended up being protective in terms of reducing youth symptoms of depression and anxiety. And similarly, for the percentage of African American residents in the neighborhood, I found that for African American youth living in a neighborhood that has a greater percentage of African American residents was both associated with greater experiences of cumulative social support as well as more positive perceptions of their neighborhood as a supportive and cohesive place. And this was indirectly related to reduced symptoms of depression and anxiety. So in conclusion, trying to make sense of these findings, I actually found a number of findings that were consistent with my hypothesis. So I did find some support for these theories regarding how neighborhood disadvantage may relate to kind of breakdowns and social ties. Of note, these kind of theories, specifically social disorganization theory, have been postulated more in terms of trying to make sense of social disorder and lack of social control and how that relates to delinquency or violent behavior. So I think this study kind of builds on that by saying it's not just about, you know, reduced social control and how that relates to youth violence, but it's also about how does this affect youth psychological well-being. So without, you know, with reduced social ties, with not perceiving their neighborhood as a supportive place, youth may then be more likely to be at risk for symptoms of depression and anxiety. Yet in contrast, I also found kind of health promotive effects of some of these neighborhood characteristics. So specifically the percentage of African American residents and the percentage of residentially stable residents in the neighborhood were associated with reduced risk for symptoms of depression and anxiety. And as I mentioned before, briefly, that some of these variables were actually positively correlated with each other. So percentage of African American residents was positively correlated with the percentage of families living below the poverty line, for example. And I think this study kind of speaks to how complex neighborhoods really are. And that when we think about interventions with neighborhood, it's really important to understand what are the strengths of the community, what are the strengths of the neighborhood, as well as what are the risk factors. So moving into, you know, what that means in terms of implications, I think as we think about practice in these communities, it's important that we understand the complexities of certain neighborhoods. And I think there is a general tendency in public health and in psychology to kind of label neighborhoods as being good neighborhoods or bad neighborhoods without really taking into account all of these kind of complex co-occurring factors at the neighborhood level and how those might be relating differentially to youth outcomes. So one piece here I think that's relevant, some of you might be familiar with Moving to Opportunity or other kind of neighborhood mobility programs. If you're not familiar, the gist of these types of projects is really to address concentrated poverty by removing black or predominantly black or Latino families from neighborhoods with higher levels of concentrated poverty and relocating them in what's typically been predominantly white, more middle-class communities. This has been a strategy in terms of addressing issues of concentrated poverty, trying to allow these newly located residents opportunities, maybe increased opportunities for employment. But in more recent evaluative studies of these kinds of projects, the findings have been really mixed. And I think one of the possible reasons for that is that by relocating these families, even if you are providing increased economic opportunities in terms of employment, you're also causing problems by removing families from the communities and kind of social ties that they have. In addition, families have talked about feeling more isolated and not accepted in their new communities. And I think this speaks to some of the complicated ways in which policies, even if they may be well-intentioned, end up having these kind of negative ramifications. So one thing that I would propose, especially kind of based on the findings of this study, is that we might want to think rather more about public and private efforts to reinvest in urban, economically disadvantaged African American neighborhoods. So thinking about increasing opportunities for employment or other economic opportunities and promoting neighborhood stabilization in these communities as opposed to thinking about ways that we can relocate families from these communities into others, because there are a lot of strengths, as I noted, just a couple within the community. So how can we think about addressing issues of unemployment, for example, creating increased economic opportunities and promoting neighborhood stabilization as opposed to thinking about kind of removing families from these communities and the social supports that they may have. So I just want to acknowledge the participants from the study. The study took place in Flint, Michigan. So the Flint Adolescent Study participants and the community schools, the data collection was done within the school system. I also want to acknowledge the Prevention Research Center of Michigan and the Center for the Study of Black Youth in Context, which is where I'm doing my postdoctoral fellowship. I want to thank you all for your attention. And at this point, if you have any questions, I'm more than happy to take those.